This is the Rightscast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at rightscast.net.
Do you like surprises? When it comes to good writing, I love them. After editing and reviewing books for about a decade, I find that when I start reading something new, my brain is already clicking away with predictions from the first chapter. Who the killer will be, or how the couple will finally get together. Having the skills to make educated guesses on questions like these makes me a better editor and reviewer because it allows me to focus on details in the craft. Of course, it also takes away some of the pleasure of reading. That's why I'm always delighted when an author can do something unexpected and surprise me. If the author can make me sit up straight in my chair or laugh out loud, so much the better. Hi there. I'm Ekta Garg, a reviewer, editor, author, and dreamer of stories and books, and I'm delighted to present this episode of Biblio Breakdown here on the Rightscast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. In this episode, we're talking about surprising your readers within the context of Logging Off by Nick Spaulding. I'll offer analysis and writing exercises along the way so you can see what this book has done well and put it to practice in your own writing. Let's get started. When I read the blurb for the novel Logging Off, I found out it was about a British man named Andy Bellows, who is a freelance graphic designer with a big problem. Andy is addicted to technology and, more specifically, social media. The blurb told me that Andy would spend the duration of the book trying to fight his addiction by quitting it cold turkey. But nothing could prepare me for the opening lines of the book, which made me blink twice and then giggle. Chapter 1, in Andy's own voice, starts like this. Oh my God, this is amazing. Why haven't I seen this before? It's an app that records your bowel movements. Its name, How You Pooing. Yes, that's right. It's called How You Pooing. Genius. I'll admit, when I read the book the first time, I didn't know quite what to make of this opening. But within a paragraph or two, Andy makes it clear why an app like this would be important to him. He suffers from irritable bowel syndrome, and even though his discovery of the app is funny, the condition itself is not. Yet, Andy manages to convey the seriousness of his illness in a way that will make you laugh time and again throughout the entire story. His self-deprecation, solidly British in every way, only makes it funnier. After all, if you're dealing with a serious condition that affects your life every day, at some point, using laughter as medicine will definitely help you feel better. As a character, not only does Andy make us laugh, but he has the uncanny ability to home in on universal truths. On the morning that the book starts, Andy is preparing to do a presentation at Fluidity, an up-and-coming London fashion house that he can't relate to on a personal level. Andy doesn't mind so much, though, because he's a freelancer and a grown-up. He knows that as long as you do a job well, you don't have to be in love with it every single minute of every single day. Paying your bills is important, too. He says, Fluidity designs the kind of clothes I wouldn't be seen dead in, as I am not 21 and barely in control of my own faculties, but they do seem to have a lot of money to throw around. I intend to be the graphic designer they throw some of that money at when I wow them with my skills. It's almost a given, then, that Andy's problems with social media implode during his presentation, because all morning he's ignored a severe pain in his neck and warning signs from his intestine that he might need to visit the facility soon. He was so busy beating level 3000 on Candy Crush and arguing with a man on Facebook about whether the city's plan to build houses on an old unused dairy farm is a good idea that he hasn't left any time for anything other than pulling his presentation materials together while he waits for his Uber. Right in the middle of his presentation, Andy's jaw locks up. He can't speak, and then he feels a familiar churning in his gut. After an embarrassing run to the bathroom, Andy manages to make it home, secure in the knowledge that his chance with Fluidity is gone. Which might be for the best, actually, because one of the company heads was wearing a see-through shower curtain as her outfit. after Andy spends hours on Google diagnosing himself with anywhere from 7 to hundreds of different cancers or possibly a cerebrodendroglioma, he goes to the doctor, and that's where he gets the worst diagnosis of all. All of his time with his technology is affecting him both physically and mentally. Spending hours in one position with his mobile devices is causing the locked jaw. The combative nature of social media platforms adds low-lying stress to his day that affects his irritable bowel syndrome. When something like a job presentation comes up, that just makes the stress and his condition flare up. His doctor recommends a digital detox for 2 months. "I'm not sure I can do it," he tells his doctor. Then, to the reader, Andy goes on, "I wouldn't say I'm cursed with a massive ego, but it's never nice to admit when you don't think you're capable of something. The fact that I can shows just how scared I am and in need of counsel." Characters often fool themselves with how strong they can be. In Andy's case, though, he's under no false assumptions. He knows how much he relies on his technology. In fact, after his doctor gives him a pamphlet about how to go through a digital detox, Andy thinks, "I know I could stand to spend less time looking at Twitter and playing Fortnite, but this horrible little leaflet is basically suggesting that I give up my entire life." From the opening pages of the book, right through the doctor's diagnosis and the realization of what he has to do to fix his health, Andy is honest. Sometimes his honesty is just funny. At other times, his honesty deserves a laugh and then a second look. Later in the novel, when Andy is suffering through the detox, he meets with his friend Fergus, who suggests a distraction from social media. As the local newspaper's star reporter, Fergus knows his publication inside and out, and he tells Andy that personal ads are still around. "Why not go on a blind date?" Fergus says. Andy hedges, and Fergus calls him out on it. "Why don't you want to give it a go?" he asks. Andy narrates, "I squirm in the seat a little. Well, I have no idea what she looks like, for starters. On Tinder, you get a picture." "Oh, so you're just about the looks, are you?" He gives me a look of admonishment. "A bit shallow, don't you think?" I look up to the ceiling in disgust. "Of course I'm shallow, Fergus. I use Tinder." Most characters would resent their best friend calling out their undesirable traits, but not Andy. He's self-aware enough to understand his faults and comfortable enough to own up to them. It's refreshing in a character and surprising to the readers. Stories thrive on conflict, and that conflict often comes because characters can't bear to tell one another the truth. Sometimes they hide the truth from themselves. Here, however, we have a character who doesn't hesitate to tell it and doesn't bat an eye when other characters do too. That doesn't mean that life is easy for Andy Bellows, though. Not at all. Because if telling the truth spares a person from having to remember a lie, it also creates all sorts of other complications that lead to the conflict that drives the story. Before we get into that, though, it's time for our first writing exercise. Be sure to use a work in progress. Now, go to one of the scenes of conflict in your manuscript. Maybe it's the climax or you're inciting an incident. Whatever you choose, go to that scene and look at what your characters are doing and saying. What are they thinking and feeling? How much of that are they sharing? More importantly, what are they not sharing? Are they actively hiding something or lying about it? Now, open a new document on your writing device or turn to a fresh page in your notebook. If you're writing on a computer, this will be easy. Copy and paste the scene into the new document. Then, rewrite the scene, only this time, make your characters say exactly what's on their minds. Don't let them hide behind half-truths or weighty silences. Let them express every hurt, every bit of confusion, every longing. This might seem counterintuitive. After all, some genres thrive on misdirection and red herrings. The purpose of this exercise, though, is character building. It allows you to get closer to your characters and gives you deeper insight into what they need and want in key moments of heightened emotion. That allows you to deepen your relationship with them, which gives you the opportunity to write about them more effectively.
Halloween cometh, as does National Novel Writing Month, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company is preparing for the merriment and, well, the misery that accompanies the forthcoming holiday season. Are you struggling with writer's block as the year comes to an end? Burn it away with Kill Your Darlings Candle Company's new candle by that very name. Yes, their Writer's Block candle is a proprietary blend of spiced honey and whiskey, and it's a must burn whenever you're desperate for your words to burn through you. And then there's Diverged in a Wood, an homage to the Robert Frost poem, The Road Not Taken. Diverged in a Wood smells of fir, spruce, and cedar, or, in other words, it's the perfect candle to introduce some solace to your writing and reading regimen or to complement your seasonal soirees. So visit kydcandleco.com today to get your Writer's Block, Diverged in a Wood, or candles from their signature selection. Again, that's kydcandleco.com. Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. Candles for the wordsmiths of the world.
It could also offer you new scenes to use, or maybe even a subplot or two. After the rewrite, go back to your original manuscript and compare the two. Are you surprised by what your characters reveal to one another? Can you use some of the new material you wrote in the current scene? Can some of it be used later? Now, look at the new material with a different eye, one that's focusing on the craft. With the benefit of having your characters putting everything on display, can you go back to the original scene and deepen the conflict? Make your characters say something that will cause even more hurt or confusion? Could it lead to more tension? As architects of stories, it's our job to design manuscripts that will transport our readers to new places. Don't be afraid to ask your characters to surprise you, though. It might do wonders for developing them or even the entire story even further. As I said, honesty may be a good policy, but that doesn't mean it's always an easy one, nor does it mean that it's even the preferable one. Despite the extreme temptation to cheat on his detox, Andy sticks with it. It helps, of course, that before logging off all of his social media accounts, he alerted everyone to what he was doing so they won't be pinging him constantly. It helps even more that he put all of his devices, including his cell phone and his gaming console, into a box, and that the box currently lives at Fergus's house. On the detox, Andy's allowed to use his computer for work, but he can't use it for anything else. A few weeks in, Andy comes to the following conclusion. I feel like a moron these days. Literally, it feels like my IQ levels have dropped off a cliff since the detox began. I've been so used to outsourcing my general knowledge to Google that when I have to fall back on the contents of my brain, I find that it's a sluggish, stupid thing with far less recall of facts than it should have. On the flip side, though, Andy's sleeping better, there's no more pain in his neck, and a major reduction of pain in his gut, and his creativity has experienced a huge burst. So when he gets the opportunity to pitch a new logo design in person to a pie shop, he jumps on it. Never mind that the pie shop is in the western part of the country, more than 100 miles away. Andy's done so well and is so proud of his design that he wants to share the excitement in person, even though the one exception to the detox means he could do the presentation over video chat. But no, he can do this. After all, he managed a trip to the hardware store to buy new light bulbs for his bathroom, something he's been meaning to do but didn't because he was too busy online. That trip went so well that it boosts Andy's confidence. He doesn't need to scope out the town ahead of time online or use the GPS on his phone. Drive to a part of the country he's never visited before using only paper maps to guide him? Of course he can do this. After all, look at how well lit the bathroom is now. To Andy's credit, he even starts the day of the presentation topped up on optimism. But then he ends up lost on country roads, which might be generous because some of them are actually dirt trails, and driving his car into a duck pond that the map didn't warn him about. The irony is not lost on him when a farmer finds him next to his sinking car and uses a cell phone to text for help. Even in this state, though, when the farmer asks why he doesn't have a phone, Andy's honest about the detox. The farmer, a little baffled, is impressed and lets Andy use his phone to call the pie shop to explain the problem. This time, when the shop owner offers to reschedule for the next day over video chat, Andy agrees without hesitation. At least he knows he'll nail that. After all, his presentation or work are what matter the most. But it's still frustrating that all of this could have been solved so easily if he'd been able to use his phone's GPS and Google to look up more information about the shop and check on what his favorite social media influencers are doing. and see if Jerry on Facebook is still opposed to the construction of homes on that dairy farm. In other words, life with digital media would be so much better. This push and pull in the plot continues for Andy throughout the entire book. While we often think of our characters dealing with the big moments in their lives, those things that we focus on in major scenes, it helps to remember how the big changes for them impact them on a micro level, too. The crux of the novel is Andy's obsession with social media and devices and just how necessary both have become to his daily life. It's important, then, that he sees and the readers see that constant tension play out in a variety of ways. Because even though we might be able to predict the end, for Andy, it's as much about the journey as achieving an improved quality of life. After the duck pond incident, Andy wants to claw his way into that box with his devices in it. Unfortunately, now he can't quit the detox, even though every instinct is urging him to do so. Remember his friend, Fergus, the newspaper reporter? Well, Fergus decided to write a feature story on Andy and the digital detox, and apparently it's starting to get quite a bit of interest. Andy wouldn't know, of course, because he can't go online to see what kind of attention the story got or how many likes, but Fergus assures him that more thumbs are going up by the day. If Andy quits now, he'll be letting Fergus down. He knows he's been neglecting their friendship a little bit, and Fergus will rib him endlessly for it. And really, at this point, it's only for another month or so. What's a few weeks for his friend's professional well-being? So, Andy forges ahead. And there is that blind date to look forward to, because Fergus even managed to talk Andy into going ahead with that. Despite how ridiculous he feels reading personal ads in a newspaper and using a landline phone to answer an ad, Andy is surprised when he talks to Henrietta and discovers that she's actually not a fan of social media. He starts to think that maybe he's not so crazy after all for actively getting off the internet. After all, Henrietta sounds like a lovely person on the phone, and she doesn't go online. His car might be in a repair shop drying out, but maybe a digital detox will be the best thing to happen to him. Because it's been nearly a year since Andy's been in a relationship, and he misses it. So he's willing to give Henrietta and the whole personal ad idea a chance. When they meet at Heirloom Coffee Cafe, Andy starts to think his detox problems are all over. He tells readers, "Henrietta comes over to me and takes my hand, shaking it gently. I can see now that she is a little taller than me, which is a first. In fact, Henrietta is not the kind of woman who has historically been my type. But my word, am I pleased that she agreed to meet me today. I may have to alter what my type is after this." Never in a million years could Andy have imagined going on a digital detox, and never in a billion years would Andy have agreed to a blind date without checking the person out online first. But here he is, having done both. And so far, the date is off to a great start. The two of them are sitting in the cafe, having a lovely time when two police officers walk in ahead to the counter. To Andy, it's clear that the cops have stopped in for a cup of coffee, and he can see them eyeing the muffins in the pastry case. He realizes that a muffin would be a really good idea. Clearly, though, Henrietta doesn't agree. From the moment the cops walk in, she's spooked. At first, Andy thinks he's done or said something wrong and even asks about it. Henrietta tries to reassure him that everything is just dandy. "And yet," Andy says, "my date still looks like the San Andreas fault has just let go, so something is definitely going on." He does his best to reassure Henrietta in a vague sort of way, even if he really doesn't know what's wrong. He starts to worry, though, when Henrietta drops to the floor and hides under the table. Andy's first concern is that she's some sort of criminal and is afraid the cops will find her, but no, it's not nearly that straightforward. After a quick back and forth in which Henrietta stage whispers about the police being a part of the deep state, Andy discovers the problem. "I'm not," he says, having coffee with a hardened criminal, it appears. "Just someone who's clearly a conspiracy theorist of the highest order. Joy of Illuminati joys." It seems as if Andy's digital detox has led him to another baffling situation that ends with Henrietta trying to run away from the police by trying to climb through the bathroom window, only to get stuck in it. When the cafe owner alerts Andy to the situation, he tries to help get Henrietta unstuck and asks her where on earth she got all of her information. Her answer? YouTube. Everything eventually gets sorted out, but the result leaves Andy more conflicted than ever before on doing the detox. On this day, his pro-social media stance has gotten another vote. Dating on the internet is certainly a good thing, he tells readers. I've managed to prove that today. I would like to think that Henrietta is alone in her wild and crazy way of thinking, but all the evidence I've seen in the dark recesses of the internet proves that this probably isn't the case. Don't believe me? Search for the Flat Earth Society on YouTube sometime. If you need to chew on something while you do it, I recommend a nice chocolate muffin. By this point in the book, we can't help but feel Andy's pain. His detox has led him to some strange places, literally, and allowed him to meet some strange people, also literally. The irony is glaring when he thinks about how often these things happen to people online as well. The humor is subtle and whiplash fast, as is often the case in books by British authors about British characters, but it emphasizes time and again Andy's conflict about whether social media is a good thing or a bad thing. It gives the plot a universal appeal because it doesn't need big sweeping fight scenes or dramatic speeches to make an impact. Andy's struggle could be anyone's struggle. Time for your next writing exercise. Go back to the work in progress that you chose for today. Look at a major plot point. Make a note of how your character has changed or is going to change in the coming pages. Now go to the scenes immediately following that major plot point. What's happening in them? How can you take that major change and show it in the quieter, smaller scenes? What can you emphasize that will allow readers to feel from their hearts outward just how their characters are struggling? Where can you add details that show the overarching theme of your story without stating it outright? Look at that plot point again, that moment of major conflict or change. What about it is universal? What is the thing that readers can point to and say, I know how that feels because I felt the same way? Look at those scenes that come right after that point. What in them shows that universality of your character's struggle? How can you highlight those universal feelings in new or unusual ways for your readers? Most of us probably haven't found ourselves on a blind date where the date gets stuck in the bathroom window trying to escape a dark organization made up of people trying to pick out muffins. We have felt frustrated when we've made ourselves forego a guilty pleasure for our health, though. We've winced when making a mature adult decision when all we really wanted to do is lie down on the floor and throw a tantrum like a toddler. The circumstances might be different for us compared to Andy, but even as we find ourselves laughing out loud at his situation, we also find ourselves sympathizing with him. And that's what the best stories do. Whether you're writing about wizards in school, or a white lawyer defending a black man in the Deep South, or a duel between magicians, the connection between you and your readers happens when they can identify a little piece of themselves and their own lives in the characters and plots you've created. Find that universal theme, and your readers will be hooked no matter what kind of story world you construct.
This episode is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing. Dandelion Web Marketing helps writers and authors thrive online. If you need to get your writer's platform up and running fast, Dandelion Web Marketing's Author Quick Start packages are the place to start. These Author Quick Start packages take the headache out of creating your author website and can help you with that all-important analytics tracking and more. So become your best you online today with Dandelion Web Marketing by visiting dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers to learn more. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers.
The connection also happens when you have a winning protagonist, or at least one who's willing to spill his guts on the page. For that level of intimacy, writers often turn to first-person point of view. In Andy's case, though, we're not just following the story along from his vantage point. He's actively reaching out to us, making us participants in his dilemma. The storytelling technique used by author Nick Spaulding is a little bit of a risk, and if you read some of the reviews of the book, they'll show you that not everyone bought into Andy's voice. But if you take it as it's presented, A guy, genuinely befuddled with his state in life and wanting to make an equally genuine effort at making it better, this novel is a riot from start to finish. Andy's voice definitely contributes to that. He breaks the fourth wall regularly, drawing us in, almost expecting a response from us. Like when he decides to do the detox and he meets Fergus the next day in a coffee shop, Fergus goes to place their coffee orders. When he leaves Andy at the table, Andy says, "Look! Look at all the people in here who are using their mobile phones. Look at them all, surfing the internet, looking at Twitter, playing Candy Crush. I have only been offline for 20 hours and I'm already insanely jealous of everybody else in the world." Andy wants us to feel his confusion, his agony, and his ambivalence, because throughout the entire novel, he waffles back and forth between being pro-detox and anti-detox. His various experiences let him see with ease how there are benefits and drawbacks to social media and mobile devices. And while he's physically and mentally feeling better, emotionally, he's still in that gray space in the middle. This becomes even more apparent when he falls into a new friendship, almost by accident, with another young woman named Grace, who sees Fergus's article about Andy's detox and asks Andy for advice about it. Soon enough, Andy and Grace are spending lots of real quality time together. They're going for long walks and exploring the English countryside. At some point, Fergus does another article, and a new organization called Loggers Off springs up of people who want to go on a digital detox too. To Andy's horror and Fergus and Grace's delight, Loggers Off has asked Andy to come and speak. Andy's not necessarily a wallflower, but one of the perks of being online has always been the separation between him and others by a screen. Once again, a sense of obligation forces Andy's hand. Fergus is getting a lot of positive attention for the articles. Grace is the owner of the coffee shop where Andy and his unfortunate date with Henrietta happened. Henrietta is long gone, but Andy spent a lot of time at the cafe since then, and it's decided that Loggers Off will hold their first meeting there. The increased foot traffic would mean a significant bump in sales for Grace. Andy, being the decent guy he is, turns to commiserate with readers when he says, "How can I say no? I'm going to have to do this stupid meeting with a bunch of people I've never met before because I'm being forced into doing it thanks to my so-called best friend and the woman I'm in love with." No. I didn't say that. I didn't say it. I'm not in love with her. Honestly. So yes, Andy's head over heels. His direct address of readers, time and again, flows back to an internal monologue and then into talking to other characters with such ease that we feel like we're sitting with all of them at the table. And Andy continues to talk to us as if we are. On the next page, after he's tried to reassure us that he really isn't in love with Grace, he rationalizes how there's probably a lot more hype around Loggers Off than substance. There's probably a lot of information on the internet about doing a digital detox, he reasons, and then says, "Obviously, I can't check. But given that you can find reams of information about a deep sea creature called the flying buttocks, I'm pretty sure digital detoxes will be covered at some length as well. I'll now wait while you go and Google flying buttocks." Done? Let's carry on then. These little asides are delightful and funny in and of themselves. We're not used to protagonists being just as aware of us as we are of them, but this technique by Nick Spaulding builds a bond between Andy and readers that contributes to the success of the book. Because in reality, the effects of being addicted to social media are very real and not funny at all. By letting Andy talk to us, though, we know that because he's finding amusement in his personal situation, it's totally fine for us to laugh along with him. Because that's what we're doing. We're laughing with him, not at him. And that kind of camaraderie is what helps forge compassion for Andy and others like him. And Andy, by the way, definitely sees this as a two-way relationship between us and him. In the last couple of pages of the novel, he says, "Life is about finding your balance, no matter how long it takes, no matter how hard it is to get there, and no matter how many duck ponds you have to drive into, because you will get there. Trust me. And if you don't trust me, then you can always Google it, can't you?"
So we're talking book cover design in this episode, right? Well, once you have an amazing book cover made for your book, you're going to need equally incredible photos of your book to help promote it online. And that is where, friends, that is where Mockup Shots come in. Mockup Shots is an online software brought to you by Adazing that lets you upload your book cover to create high-quality images of your books for marketing and publicity purposes. Using Mockup Shots has helped me further develop my brand and sharpened my web presence, whether it be on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or on my author site. Not only that, but Mockup Shots has saved me tons of time. Whenever I need a stunning new photo of one of my books, I can simply hop into Mockup Shots, upload my book cover, and generate a beautiful photo of my book in minutes. Sound awesome? It is. And if you head to bit.ly/coverphotosdeal now, you can get Mockup Shots at a special RightsCast Network discount. Yes, so head to bit.ly/coverphotosdeal today and start making your book and its cover shine online.
By stretching the conventional way of writing first-person point of view, author Nick Spaulding gives us an experience that is witty, breezy, and also thoughtful, all at the same time. And now for your last writing exercise. Look at the point of view you've chosen for your work in progress. Use one of the important scenes you've picked out earlier. What point of view are you writing from? If you've chosen third person, copy and paste a section into a new document and then flip everything to first-person point of view. Give readers a chance to hear and feel exactly what the character is thinking. If you've already written in first-person point of view, let the characters talk directly to the reader. Let them justify their bad choices and try to explain away their mistakes. Let them share the secrets they won't even share with their loved ones. See what comes out of exploring your character in these ways. Does it deepen your understanding of the character? Does it give you something new to incorporate at another point in the story? Are you surprised by what you find? The best writing, no matter what genre, surprises us over and over. When we can laugh at something because the character gives us permission to, it brings us closer to the character and the story. Andy certainly doesn't have a problem wearing his heart on his sleeve. It's probably right under the holster he has for his cell phone, or it would be if he was the running sort of chap. But we don't mind that he isn't. He's endeared himself to us so much by the end of the book, and we've laughed out loud at so many things that he's shared and experienced that we can see ourselves being good friends with him and Fergus and Grace, enjoying the perfect cup of flat white coffee in Grace's cafe. And that's what the best kind of story does, after all. It draws us in and warms our hearts, even as it surprises us that we're sharing a table with these characters. In the case of Logging Off by Nick Spaulding, almost literally. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or found its exercises useful, please leave the RightsCast Network a rating and review on wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the RightsCast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. To those of you who have already left us a rating and review, thank you. Additional thanks go to the RightsCast Network's patrons, who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/RightsCast. For their support, RightsCast Network patrons get some great perks, including RightsCast swag, discounts on R.R. Campbell's editing services, and entries in monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen and Angeline Boley in supporting our programming directly today at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. Any level of contribution will get you access to some of those fantastic patron perks. So become a supporter today by making your pledge at patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors, Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit rightscast.net/sponsors. You can stay in touch with us by visiting rightscast.net or by saying hello on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the handle @rightscast or by searching for the RightsCast Network. We're also available by email at rightscast@gmail.com, or you can call us at 608-284-8342, where you can leave a voicemail with questions for future guests or other matters you'd like us to address in future programming. Again, that number is 608-284-8342. To reach me personally, you can visit The Right Edge, that's W-R-I-T-E, at therightedge.wordpress.com, or find me on Instagram and Twitter with my handle at EktaRGarg. That's E-K-T-A-R-G-A-R-G. Thanks again for listening. Until we meet again, this is EktaGarg. Right on and right well.
This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing, Lost Lake Press, and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at RightsCast.net.